The charges have been updated and upgraded after a beating suspect dies in Fargo. The speed limit is updated and upgraded, and speeding tickets go down in North Dakota. And I don't know if it's an upgrade or not, but it's certainly an update. The number of West Nile virus cases in North Dakota is rising. We'll have all these stories for you coming up today on the Steve Alstrom Show on this Friday afternoon. It is August 15th, 2025, the year of our Lord, and the Minnesota High School Girls Softball Tournament was still won by a guy, and we are still bringing you a full variety of news stories, weather, sports, pop culture, whatever's going on in the world that we think you should know about. This is what we do as we give you a recap on what's been a busy day. So we got a lot of ground to cover today. A couple of guests will be joining us. Jesse Johnner, Cass County Sheriff, will be here. Going to get his firsthand experience, I guess, relay the stories about his firsthand experience being downtown last weekend at bar closing. And I actually was thinking to myself last week, you know, I should go downtown at 2:30 just to see how insane it is. And Jesse has been on a couple of other programs here in our building this week saying, yeah, it was total bananas down there when it gets into the early morning hours and everybody has had way too much to enjoy themselves with and things get a little goofy outside. So we'll talk about that. Plus, what's this new story going on here with the Cass County Jail? Like, the Cass County Commission may not let Fargo police bring in their people. What's going on there? So we'll talk to Jesse about that and probably a couple other things here today on the program as well. We will also be talking about an issue that I think is really important for us to give some time to here while we are in mid-August before most of our kids have gone back to school. I don't think the kids are going back to school quite yet, but it won't be long. It won't be long. And I'm sure there are some schools in within the sound of my voice that are actually getting going yet. Of course, the fall sports kids are back practicing at school, getting ready for the upcoming seasons. But pretty soon, those school buildings will be full all day long. And the United States Drug Enforcement Administration is encouraging families, parents specifically, to talk to their kids about the dangers of drugs. And they also want to highlight what's happening in social media when it comes to buying and selling illegal drugs. These were things that we never had to worry about 10, 15, 20 years ago. Certainly our parents, mine did anyway, didn't have to worry about this. They had to worry about me getting some old Milwaukee back, you know, in Mark Nelson's shed. That was about all that they had to worry about back then. Now, it is a different deal, no doubt about that. So Emily Murray with the DEA is going to come on with us today in the 5 o'clock hour as well. We're going to talk about a trans-vegan cult today. That should be interesting for a horrible reason. So we'll tell you about that. And a Fargo South grad is in the news. Never really wanted to be, I don't suppose, but in the middle of a firestorm because of his new job. And he is a performer on the Minnesota Vikings dance team. There seems to be a lot of outrage about this, and I kind of shrug my shoulders about that. So we'll talk about this today here on the show. Does this bother you? Does it make you mad? Are you angry? Is this the next Dylan Mulvaney, or is it just some guy who likes to dance and the Vikings dance team says, go ahead? I don't know. I know a lot of people are really up in arms about this one. I just don't seem to be all that bothered by it. I don't know. Some people say they're going to give up their Vikings tickets. And so maybe I'm missing something, and you can help fill in the blanks today. And I also have a story that wasn't supposed to be funny, but it kind of is. And hopefully it'll make sense to you when I talk about a house that is now condemned in Fargo. So lots to do on the show today. Should be, I think, a fairly interesting program for you. We'll update Tom Hoagie as well in the PGA playoffs, which sounds kind of weird to those of us old-timers. Like, wait a minute. Golf, they don't have playoffs. And go, well, they do now. And Tom is trying his best to stick around, and it looked like he was dead in the water today, and then a finishing flurry at the BMW Championship. So we'll talk about that as well. All right, let's get to it here. 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines on a Friday afternoon, and we give them to you rapid fire because there's a lot of ground to cover. And so let's get to it here. August 15th, 2025, average high for this day, 81, average low 57, record high 102 back in 1935, record low 43 in 1979. Sunrise this morning was at 6:25 and the sun will set at 8:37. In the markets today, it was a mixed day on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 34 points. The S&P 500 was down 18. The NASDAQ was down 87. Just a lot of mixed messages today. Stock market not exactly sure what to make of this economy right now. A weird inflation number came out Wednesday, but really good retail numbers today. We'll talk about that in a moment. Also today in the world of commodities, WTI crude oil down about a buck at $63.14. Gold today down $1.50, silver down 5 cents, Bitcoin down about $1,000 at $117,225. AAA says the average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas nationwide is $3.15. In North Dakota, it's $2.90, Minnesota $2.95, South Dakota $2.98. Diesel fuel today $3.71 a gallon. In the news today, the man who police say beat another man to death in downtown Fargo, August 3rd, has now been charged with manslaughter. Tobias Walker used his skateboard to assault and eventually kill 55-year-old John Pilcher, sent him to the hospital with critical injuries where he later died. 10 days later, he was already facing an aggravated assault charge, but he's now been charged with manslaughter and aggravated assault with a dangerous weapon. This was part of that night of absolute insanity downtown Fargo a couple weeks ago. Story number two, the new 80-mile-an-hour speed limit on North Dakota highways is 2 weeks old. Captain Brian Newland, our buddy from the North Dakota Highway Patrol, tells the forum that speeding violations are down 25% in the first 2 weeks of August because drivers and troopers are adjusting to the higher limit. So maybe we were always driving 82, and they're not going to stop you if the speed limit's 80, but they probably were when it was 75. WDOI radio reports the number of human cases of West Nile virus is rising in North Dakota. As of yesterday, 26 reported cases. 11 of those people were hospitalized. 9 had what were called nervous system complications. Yowza, that doesn't sound very good. 38 mosquito pools have tested positive and a few birds as well. They say late August is usually the worst part of the year. Oh, goody. Guess where we're headed? Late August. Guess what we had? 4 inches of rain in my backyard here a few days ago. This is not good. Make sure you put on that bug spray. Long closing bug spray, my friends. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz reports the Star Tribune is privately wavering on whether to seek re-election after previously signaling he was likely to run. The Star Tribune interviewed nearly a dozen people in the party anonymously and asked them for their intel on this whole thing. And they found out that there's some pretty intense speculation about his political future from people that are close to him. He has been very evasive on the subject, says he will say something about it after the Minnesota State Fair. But this is getting a lot of people sitting up on the couch now on the Democrat Party saying, we better start to figure this out here. So he is privately wavering, is what people close to the governor say. Valley News Live reports that the Trump administration is stepping up its crackdown on policing in D.C. Pam Bondi, the AG, today named the head of the Drug Enforcement Administration to be Washington's emergency police commissioner. I guess this was yesterday. I'm making headlines today. A significant move as the federal government tries to take over law enforcement in the city. Terry Cole will assume the powers and duties vested in the D.C. chief of police. So this is interesting there. And, of course, this is prompting outrage on the left, but everything does. So there you go. The average 30-year fixed rate mortgage, report CNBC, was 6.58 for the week ended Thursday, down 6.63 from the week prior. Mortgage rates have come down a point and a half from October of 2023 when rates almost hit 8%. Retail numbers out today as the nation's shoppers stepped up their spending in July, specifically at auto dealerships. ABC News reports retail sales rose 0.5% last month. A little bit of a slowdown from the 0.9% in June, but they were expecting something less than that. Auto sales rose 1.6%. Business at clothing stores was up 0.7%. Electronics stores sales were down 0.6%. So people continue to spend more than they did last month and last year. When it comes to jewelry, the market's still not all that bad. CNBC reports that Pandora is seeing strong sales growth in the United States. They say that their company, Pandora, posted an 8% rise in U.S. sales year over year in the second quarter. Meanwhile, sales in China fell 15%. Richemont, owner of the Cartier watch brand, posted just a few days ago a 17% jump in U.S. sales in the second quarter, despite weakness in other places as well. So I guess it's kind of what we talked about. The people with the money, they continue to spend, and they're spending more aggressively than they were a year ago. President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill is benefiting people in some states more than others, reports CNBC. The highest average tax breaks for 2026 will be in Wyoming, they project. The state of Washington is number two, Massachusetts three, Florida four, and D.C., the District of Columbia, number five. Individual taxpayers will save an average, listen to this now, of $3,752, according to a Tax Foundation analysis released this week. So in 2026, individual taxpayers will save an average of $3,752. And Tom Hoagie, I mentioned it a minute ago, he had a tough front nine today. He was three over after nine holes of the BMW Championship, and then he double bogeyed number 12 today, so he was five over on the round, but then he birdied 14, 15, 16, and 17 to get himself plus one on the day, par on 18, and so it is a 1 over 72 today, and because of that, he is 3 over for the tournament, and it's likely that he'll have to be somewhere in the top 12 or 13 in order to advance to next weekend's next stage of the PGA Tour playoffs. Right now, he would have to get to minus 2. So he is five shots away from that. But the good news in these tournaments, you don't get cut after the first 2 days. You're automatically in. So Tom, a finishing flurry today, and maybe you can carry that over to tomorrow. And those, friends, are some of the stories making headlines here on this Friday afternoon. We call it the 4 o'clock wrap. When we return on the Steve Hallstrom Show, they have reached that point in Fargo where they have said, yes, it's finally time for the House of Horrors to come down. A story that wasn't supposed to be funny, but it kind of is. I'll have that for you coming up next. All right. I got a couple of stories here for you that probably weren't meant to be humorous, but my weird mind works in interesting ways sometimes. A line of ladders sold at Home Depot has been recalled. The reason? They don't keep people off the floor. Thousands of ladders sold at Home Depot are being recalled after several reported injuries from falls. They are Werner ladders, named the Multi-Max Pro Multi-Purpose Ladder. There was a fall hazard. Their locking mechanism can jam, causing it to not fully lock into place. I don't know. I don't think it's funny. There have been 18 people that fell. 14 of those falls resulted in injuries, including bruising and broken bones. It just makes me think of that Twitter account, "You Had One Job," right, Ladder? I mean, okay, Ladder, your job is to make sure that I stay up in the air and don't hit the ground. But apparently the one thing that those ladders were sold to do is not happening on a nearly regular enough basis, so they're doing a recall on those ladders. If you want to find out if that's your ladder, well, I would start digging online and find out about that, because you don't want to be part of that statistic pool right there. And then there's a picture of a house in Fargo that is on our website, am1100theflag.com today. And I guess it's a multifamily. It's a big house, so they call it an apartment building. It just looks like a big house, but multiple people can live there for sure. Well, the city of Fargo has now deemed this, quote, a dangerous building, which just kind of makes me laugh anyway. This is a dangerous building. We've got a dangerous building alert here. It's at 1202 First Avenue South. That's not far from where I used to live when we moved to Fargo. Bought a house, 14th Street and 4th Avenue. So not far from there. But here's kind of what made me laugh. So the story goes, the building where there was a SWAT raid in June and an apartment fire in July is now being deemed a dangerous building by the city of Fargo. So, yes, two strikes against our building here right off the top of this story. City inspectors have cited numerous issues in their decision. The issues are as follows. Number one, significant wall and window damage to a unit after a SWAT raid Saturday, June 14th. And then there was a total loss of the basement, one of the basement units after a fire on July 7th. There was smoke damage to all of the other units on July 7th as well. There have been 17 calls for service, you know what I'm talking about, since January 1st of this year. Every entry door has been kicked in. They did not make any exceptions, every single one. There have been a multitude of squatters complaints and damage to a main floor unit. Electrical meters have been removed following the fire. Inspection beds were in non-conforming areas following the July 7th fire. Basement walls show significant movement with braces in place. The existing deck, yes, there's a deck on this nice little palace here, has deteriorated areas of deck boards and guardrails. And the property also suffered significant damage after fire back in 2020. So a lot has happened with this building in the last 5 years. Property owners must either obtain a permit and make the necessary repairs or be forced to demolish the building. Sounds like you might just want to start over. And there's a hearing regarding this building that is scheduled with the City Commission for September 2nd. So I don't know. It just struck me funny. The building where there's a SWAT raid in June and an apartment fire in July is now being deemed a dangerous building. Here are the numerous issues in the city inspector's decision. Then they list like 20 things, including my favorite, every entry door has been kicked in. Every one of them. How long do you suppose the deliberations took in this proceeding by the city inspectors? Well, it's got a nice coat of paint on it. The shingles aren't bad. You can't say the foundation's okay because you have basement walls with significant movement. I don't know. It doesn't look like anybody has been living there. And certainly when you have SWAT raids and apartment fires and everything else, you've got a tough row to hoe on that one there. So I just thought, I don't know, a little bit of levity here on Friday. I imagine our news team that wrote this story up took it very seriously as they wrote this story and made sure to chronicle the developments. And then I look at it, I just start chuckling like, yeah, maybe we should find something else to do with that building. Hey, while we were talking earlier about Tim Walz in Minnesota, Blois Olson, who's a political commentator, I think a lot of Blois, Blois is center, maybe a hair center left. But I think he calls it pretty well, balls and strikes on both sides. He had this take on Tim Walz. He says, all of these things I'm seeing in the Star Tribune story that I read a little bit ago about people close to him say he's waffling on whether he wants to run again, that jives with everything that I have seen and heard, said Blois. Walz has not leaned into longtime advisors, hasn't spoken to any key legislative supporters, and this week he's on vacation. My short exchange with Governor Walz at FarmFest showed him lacking his traditional energy. Maybe Walz just doesn't have the fire in the belly that's required to take on a campaign. Walz has a track record of being decisively indecisive. However, in his consideration of a third term, he's earned the right to decide when and where he wants to. The June 14th killing and shootings are giving many elected officials pause. That's the one that killed Melissa Hortman and her husband. Walz is no different. He has had an exhausting two terms, and his risk of losing a third term is higher than either the first two runs. Yep, he is 100% right about that. The biggest thing Walz and anybody else running should consider is if they have a vision to share for the future of Minnesota. Great point. The state's growth is slowing. There's a budget deficit to tackle, and the confidence of independent voters is slipping. For Republicans, if Walz doesn't run, the question will be who else may step up to run. Either way, Walz should make his decision known before he gets to the state fair, not after. Thought that was interesting. I do see those same things, that his road is tougher this year than next year in 26 than it has been the last couple times around. I just thought that was some interesting perspective from a guy who's, I don't know. I feel like his opinion is trustworthy. You can decide what you think, but there you go on that. All right, when we return on the Steve Alsham Show, Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner will be with us. What does he expect tomorrow night when he heads downtown again? Sounds like the first go-around was plenty eventful. We'll talk to him about what it might look like if he does a repeat performance. First, though, check of news and weather. We start with a visit to the newsroom. Have you been hiding your smile for years? Are you ready for a fresh start? Smile like you mean it. With Dr. Matt Eaton at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center, he's dedicated his career, really, to transforming smiles. And you know what's even better than that? What they do over there, they don't just make your teeth look better. They restore confidence one patient at a time. Life's too short to go through life without a good smile. Check out Dakota Implant and Sedation Center. Dr. Eaton helps everybody, young, seasoned, everybody in between. And when you meet this guy, you're going to feel it. It's not just a job, it's a calling. So whether you need a single tooth, a full mouth restoration, or anything in between, he's here ready to help you out with skill, compassion, and experience. Visit DakotaDentalImplant.com today. DakotaDentalImplant.com. Dr. Matt Eaton, he's the guy to see. 4:38 here on the Steve Alsham Show. Please now to welcome to the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line, Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner. Good afternoon, Sheriff. How are you?
Good afternoon, Steve. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. Appreciate you giving us a little bit of time here on this Friday afternoon. So you've decided to fill your weekends with some activity downtown. You did it last week, and I understand that you're going to maybe go down for bar closing on Saturday night, tomorrow night again. And I guess I'll just ask you to kind of share that experience. And I guess, first of all, maybe ask why you decided to go downtown last week at closing time.
Sure. Well, first off, I would just say that we have gone down in the past downtown as an agency to assist Fargo. About 2 years ago, we partnered with them on some Friday and Saturday nights when they were having some issues. And, you know, obviously with the recent events that happened, we want to look for ways that we can help prevent some of the violence in our community. And so I hadn't been down there for a couple of years to kind of evaluate, I guess, basically how busy it is, where most of the crowd seemed to be gathering. And I wanted to just get a lay of the land, I guess, because if we were going to go back down there and assist again, it's important for me to understand kind of the crowd size that we're looking at, the activity that's kind of drawing law enforcement's attention, just so I know, you know, how many resources do we need and what does that look like? What type of strategies could we use? So last Saturday I went down there with two of my sheriff's quick response team members, and we went down there to assist, but then also evaluate those things I just mentioned to you. And it was very busy. One thing that I would say real quick is that Fargo PD, they had a number of people down there. They held over a shift to have extra resources down there. And, of course, my opinion of the Fargo Police Department is that they always do an excellent job. They have great officers. They're well-trained. And they were working hard down there. And we just went down there and assisted, like I said, a little bit. You know, one of the things that I mentioned when I talked on one of the radio shows was just kind of the some of the behaviors I observed. And it certainly wasn't to make anyone feel sorry for us. That was not the intention. I know some of the media stories, the media did a great job on it, but some of the stories kind of came out as people were harassing me specifically, and I didn't take it as that. I mean, certainly I've been doing law enforcement for 27 years, and I've been called a number of different names over my career. And certainly as law enforcement professionals, we learn to deal with those things and work through those professionally. So being called a name or being flipped off isn't anything new to me, but what
yeah,
I was surprised
I'm
about,
sure.
what
yeah.
I was surprised, what I was surprised about really was just kind of the frequency of it. I had never really seen that before. And I really got to give credit to the, again, the Fargo police officers and our staff for, you know, being professional, responding to calls for service, and continually getting some of that ridicule and being able to be professional in their actions as they work through those situations. So, and then on top of that, we're actually sending resources back down there. We want to partner with Fargo and maybe curb some of these incidents if we can. You know, I don't think that by any means Fargo wasn't doing anything that, you know, to not try to prevent these things. That really comes down to, in my opinion, them having enough resources to deal with the amount of people down there. And I think that collaboration and providing extra resources can assist. And so the resources that we're sending down there isn't, you know, we're not pulling from our rural patrols or anything like that. So I want to make sure our residents know that our regular calls for service response will still be the same. This is just extra people that aren't working tonight particularly, and they want to come out and do a few extra hours. So we're actually going to have people down there tonight and tomorrow night and strategize with Fargo to work with them down there.
Is that a change then, Jesse? Are you kind of saying, okay, based on what I saw, I'm going to react to what I saw, and we're going to send some more people downtown from the Cass County Sheriff's Office? Is this kind of a decision you're making based on what you saw last week?
Yeah, and you know what, when I talked, I actually thought, Steve, that it was busy down there last weekend. But again, I hadn't been down there for a couple of years. And when I talked to one of the Fargo police officers, they had mentioned to me that the crowd was actually really light. And I, like I said, I was surprised just because I hadn't been down there for a while. I actually thought it was busy, but he told me that it gets quite a bit busier than what I saw last weekend. And if that was the case, I thought, you know what, these guys need help down here. They need some additional resources. And so Captain Matt Christensen over at the Fargo Police Department, he does a great job. He's the commander of the patrol division from Fargo, and he and I work together a lot on as members of the Red River Valley SWAT team. And I just said, hey, I can provide you some things if you want. And he's got excellent strategies and ways that he can help or plug our people in to assist their guys. And so that's what we're going to do.
I want to make sure I'm understanding you right, Jesse, because I think what you're telling me is newsworthy, and I think it should be passed along. And I'll certainly make sure that our news team is aware of it. But it sounds to me like you're seeing the situation. You're saying, let's send some people down there where you typically wouldn't on a Friday or Saturday night. So if that's the case, then how many people are you going to send down to do that? Because I think that's an important development here.
Yeah, that's we're going to send four additional people both nights. And like I said, it doesn't these are individuals that are off shift. They're not going to be down there working a 9 or 10 hour shift by any means. And just for kind of a secrecy to our operations, you know, I won't give the exact times, but you know, it's about a 4 hour shift for each of those persons. Like I said, we did do this a couple of years ago, so it's not anything like brand new. But in my opinion, as the sheriff of the county, if we've got gun violence downtown and that's trickling out to other areas as it did a few weekends ago, we don't want people to get hurt. We don't want loss of life. So if we can do anything to be proactive and stop that type of violence in our community, we certainly want to collaborate with our law enforcement partners to, you know, stop some of those things from happening.
Jesse, that's interesting that you use the term gun violence downtown. I mean, we know there were a couple of shootings the last weekend, and I think I've heard that there have been, through some surveillance methods, there have been some guns confiscated downtown. I guess I've kind of thought, based on what I've heard, and I haven't been down there myself, but it's just kind of like, you know, kind of rowdy, drunk young people down there. But you use the term gun violence downtown. I want to ask you about that a little bit. Tell me what you've seen, what you've heard, what you've experienced that leads you to say, I think the right term is not like drunk, rowdy kids, but gun violence downtown. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, and I really want to make sure when I say that, that we don't think that that's happening all the time, right?
Of course.
Our business districts down there, they've been suffering from some of this, and I want to make sure that people understand that with law enforcement down there, I feel like it's safe for people to be down there. But obviously with the weekend where we had the homicides, you know, that's what I was referencing specifically. And I don't want anyone to show up and commit those types of acts again. So I think being proactive and having law enforcement visibility down there can curb some of those things if someone is intending to do that. Now, I don't have any intel that way. But again, I just think that being proactive and visibility is obviously a deterrent.
Gotcha. So you're not defining downtown, even at Barclays, as this is gun violence capital of the world. You're just saying there has been some gun violence downtown, correct?
Yeah, with the homicides a couple weekends ago.
Okay, got it. Thank you. I never want to leave something like that where someone could hear that and say, oh, Jesse Johnner thinks it's just, you know, anarchy downtown. Yeah. So thank you for clarifying that.
No. I appreciate your clarification.
Yeah, well, no question. We want to get the info out right. We're not here to, you know, stir up trouble where there's none to be stirred up. When you offered for additional deputies to go down there both nights, you'd mentioned Matt Christensen that you work with, and that's been good. But this wasn't like Trump sending the guard into D.C. Like, there wasn't pushback. It was welcomed by Fargo PD that you were willing to send some people down?
Oh, absolutely. Fargo, you know, they're partners of ours. We work great with a number of their officers, and there's a lot of good relationships there. And, you know, the Fargo PDs even used the Highway Patrol down there before to assist them. So, you know, it's just a collaborative effort amongst agencies, and we do that with a lot of different things, like our Metro Area Street Crimes Unit, our Cass County Drug Task Force, and, you know, Red River Valley SWAT team, a number of different things that we utilize. So, you know, if I can provide extra people and it helps them out, you know, we're all in this together and we want to keep our community safe.
Did you feel, Jesse, being downtown last weekend, like, did it get to the point where you felt like, whoa, this could get really close to being on the edge here? Could it have gotten overwhelming? Did you sense it was a hostile environment? Were you at all tempted to think, my gosh, we're just like, you know, one little spark away from there being a massive incident downtown or massive aggression toward law enforcement at all? Or was it not rising to that kind of level of tension down there?
There were some things that we responded to, you know, that I thought, again, that Fargo police officers did a great job responding to very quickly and efficiently. And in doing that and showing that presence, I think that deterred situations from escalating. We did respond to one fight where there was a pretty large gathering of people, but with the amount of resources that we had and getting there quickly, I think it very, very quickly we were able to put an end to that particular situation and deter anything further from happening. So, but there wasn't anyone, I mean, you know, when you're working down there, there's just things that happen in different areas and you're responding to them. And, you know, there wasn't one thing that we watched all night because we thought something major was going to kick off. It was just literally, you know, responding to different calls for service down there and working through those.
Gotcha. Jesse, can you hang on with us through a break? I've got a couple more questions I want to ask about the jail that we haven't got to yet. Can you hang in there with us?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks so much. We'll have more with Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner. A couple of questions to finish on downtown, and then we'll talk about the jail as well when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show. We're talking with Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. We've been talking about downtown Fargo. I want to finish up the downtown storyline with this. Jesse, we know that downtown area, it's just super dense. Like, there's 3-4 bars every block, it seems like. There's a lot of places down there where you can get served. It's not quite like Nashville, maybe, where it's that kind of density, but I've got to think that this is kind of turning into some kind of a little urban legend here. It's kind of, I've got to think it can be a spot where people want to come down there to see what might happen, because it has been kind of in the news lately. Did you get a sense of any of that when you were there last weekend, or have you heard that from intel from anybody around town?
Not really so much intel, but much like you said, I mean, there's a number of bars down there, right? So anytime that you have a bunch of bars in a particular area, that's going to attract people to come down to that area. So, and I think because of the proximity, like you mentioned, it's easy for people to go down there and walk from place to place and get a variety of a different type of bar atmospheres.
Yeah.
So I think that just draws a lot of people down there.
Okay,
so.
Yeah. I've just got to think that this is, you know, turning into a, hey, let's go downtown. Stuff's going down every weekend at bar closing. So there may be a little bit of that going on here, too. I guess that's why we're glad to see more people being deployed. So we appreciate you guys doing that. I want to ask you about this jail story that's coming out, too. And the county commission now is saying we're having some disagreements with Fargo police on the rules about how this is going to go at the jail. And one of the things I'm hearing, well, I guess the two things I'm hearing are, Number one, personal property. And you're saying, if I have read these stories right, we don't have the ability to store a bunch of backpacks and personal possessions of people. We don't know what's in them. It's probably not the best thing to have happen. And then there also seems to be a difference of opinion about the way I hear it, police officers being able to carry a gun in the jail, and you guys are concerned about that. Can you kind of clear up those two things for us?
Yeah, actually, this is going to be probably a little bit long, lengthy statement here, so I'll try to cut through it as quick as I can, Steve, and then after I can have you ask me questions. But just so first off, so all your listeners know, there's one jail in Cass County, Cass County Jail. So if people are arrested in Fargo or West Fargo or anywhere in the county, they're brought to the Cass County Jail. As the sheriff, I oversee the jail. We do charge the city of Fargo and West Fargo to bring people there, but only if it's on a city ordinance violation. Okay. So if someone commits a ordinance violation in the city of Fargo and Fargo makes that arrest and they bring them to the county jail, they pay for that. If that person has a state charge at all, then the county takes the full bill. Okay. So that's the rate thing. And that our rate hasn't been raised since 2008, and it's been, $75 and $85 since that time. And it costs quite a bit more to house someone at the Cass County Jail. So the jail's not trying to make money on our local cities. They're just trying to break even on covering the costs. And by doing that, we can then enter, if we have contracts with our local entities, then we can enter into contracts with our federal partners. And then if we do that and they're paying us the $120, then I can get help. And it helps all of us, the citizens of Cass County, everyone, because those federal partners will help pay for our staff that work in the jail. So that's a good revenue builder for all of us, and it can help with tax stuff. So that's the rate thing. The other two sticking points are more of on the chief side of things. And this isn't anything new. We've had these things in play for a long time. It's just recently that the chief has been expecting a few more things from us that I think are unreasonable and actually kind of irresponsible, to be honest with you, because they want to bring in, when they arrest people, they want to bring all the property to the jail and drop it there. And we've just never accepted that before. What we all need to think about is that the jail is a controlled environment. It's my job as the sheriff to make sure that it's safe for our employees in there, the inmates and the officers that are bringing people in. We've had guns brought into our facility and an explosive device, and the explosive device was actually live. We had to have the bomb team come out and disrupt it. The other thing we need to think about is if there's a number of property items brought in for health concerns, we need to be aware of that as well. And what I mean by that is, we've had TVs, dressers, a number of different items, lamps, things like that, that don't belong in jail. We're not a storage site. We're not a storage unit.
Jesse, hang on a second. I got to understand this. Like, okay, so Steve gets picked up beating up some guy on the street. Why are we bringing in TVs and dressers?
That's a good question. It's an excellent question. Maybe that person says they have property somewhere and they need to take it somewhere, right? And that's the arresting officer's responsibility to take care of that before they bring it to the jail. But those things have been brought into our facility before. Here's my question to you, wow. Here's my question to you and all my listeners, right? And this is what I told the chief as well. So if this stuff, these items, all these extra items are brought into the jail and we accept those, let's say that someone comes in with extra clothing, maybe tents, sleeping bags, things of that nature, and they have bed bugs in them or lice, and that gets into the jail. My question to him and to everyone who's listening right now, where in the heck would I put 350 inmates? I have no place to put them while the facility gets fumigated and disinfected.
Yeah.
And now we have to close the jail down, right? So this, we got to be, I think that he's looking through a very narrow lens, and we got to look at this thing from a 5,000 foot view. I mean, we're building a brand new jail pod because we were out of space. Now, if things are brought into the jail and the continuity of operations are disrupted because of a safety reason or a public health concern, now I got to shut the whole thing down. And now we can't provide public safety to our community. So this isn't anything new. Our policies with property are in line with every place across the state. We haven't changed those. I'm not sure why he wants us to take those, but it's been a discussion point for 2 years, which is why this contract can't be signed with them. And it's very frustrating. And so the other thing that you're asking me about the gun was he wants us, or would like us, to take over their ITV court. ITV court is a court within the jail where inmates can attend court over a TV. And when the city of Fargo has ordinance violations and they have their city of Fargo court, City officers can come into our jail and conduct ITV court from there, so they don't actually have to come and get inmates and run them down to the Fargo courtroom, which is more efficient for them. He thinks we should take that over, and that's not our responsibility. It doesn't have anything to do with Cass County. What he brought up during that conversation is he felt it was unsafe for a staff to be in there because they can't have guns. Well, our staff is in there every day without guns. I've gone in there. I've looked at the facility. I've looked at operations. I have asked for specifics. I haven't gotten that to see if we could make something safer, if there's something I wasn't aware of. I don't understand that piece, and I don't have the staff to do that. And again, it's not our responsibility. So those are the two things that are hanging up this jail contract, and everything that we are doing, whether it's ITV or property, we are consistent with all sheriffs across the state. In fact, these discussions that I've been going through, I've been getting into contact from sheriffs in North Dakota, and they can't believe it, that these discussions are happening. So anyways, long story short, I don't want to continue dragging this out, right? I mean, we all have a mission, and that's to provide public safety to our city. And these things have been long and exhausting, and they're taking time. And quite frankly, our time should be devoted to providing public safety and dealing with the situations that we're having in town here with the violent situations. And that's what we should be concentrating on. So I'm hoping that the city of Fargo will get together. They'll sign this contract. They'll partner with us like we've always done. And we can continue to move forward and provide a good public safety to our community. We haven't had any issues with West Fargo. The mayor over there, Bernie Dardis, has been great to work with, along with their commissioners and their chief. There are no issues. They signed the same contract where we've proposed to Fargo, and we had no issues like this. And we haven't had any issues in the past. It's just as of the last couple of years, and it's been hard and frustrating for me to understand. Now, I would say that Commissioner Pepcorn, Commissioner Turnberg, and Commissioner Kolpak have all made contact with me. They've been inquiring and trying to work with me on this. So hopefully we can get something fixed and we can move forward. And because our citizens deserve to have public safety, we all need to use the new jail pod. It's got a lot of capacity. And we need to get back to moving past this and providing public safety. This shouldn't be a discussion for this long and taking up time away from street resources.
You're listening to WZFG Dilworth, Fargo, Moorhead, USA. Here it's 5:01, and this conversation I think is important enough that I'm moving back our news and weather block here. Jesse, let me make sure I understand one kind of important point, and then one question as we finish this up. The point that I think you're saying is you have a concern about an armed Fargo police officer being in the jail with a weapon. And my guess is you're concerned about that because what if something happens and the officer loses their weapon? Am I following you?
We don't allow weapons in our jail. I don't even carry a weapon around in my jail. We can't have an inmate get a weapon in there. Our jail is weapon free, right? I mean, the only weapons that we have in there are tasers and OC. We don't have live firearms and ammunition in our facility. We've never have.
But what
the 27 years that I've been in there, but he was mentioning that he felt like it was unsafe for his officers because they couldn't have a gun in there. And I said, well, our guys don't have guns in there. It's a safe facility.
So that's the point of contention. He wants the officers to
he wants us to take over the ITV court because he feels it's unsafe for his staff to be in there because they can't have guns is one of the things that was mentioned.
Oh, I see. So if it was ITV court, they wouldn't have to necessarily come in there to have that. But he's saying if we can't have guns in there, you guys have to take over the court piece.
No, so ITV court, their officers come in and they conduct that court inside the jail. We bring the inmates down to them. And remember, ITV court is just, and I'm talking about just City of Fargo court.
Yep.
So if they bring in officers to oversee that because it's their court. It's not Cass County or district court.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants Cass County government, to take over Fargo's ITV court. The explanation or the reason that he was saying that he wanted us to do that was he felt like his staff shouldn't be inside the jail, that they could be assaulted, they could be injured, They don't have their weapons available yep. to them. And again, my explanation was, is no, none of us do. None of us carry weapons.
Gotcha.
We haven't for, you know.
Yeah, gotcha.
So,
okay.
So that's just been a contentious point. The problem, and the other reason is, I mean, I don't have staff to do that, right? And it's not our responsibility. So, and we don't have to offer that. ITB court is a convenience thing. It's not a mandated thing. We just do it so that they can use less resources, because otherwise they could just come and get their people and bring them down to their own courtroom, which would be downtown, right? And they'd have to have more officers to mm-hmm. escort their people down there. So,
yeah. Okay.
So it's, in my opinion, I mean, these things are, you know, and this isn't anything, I mean, whether it's Bismarck, Grand Forks, they all, their officers in those cities come in and do ITB court in those jails. So we're not doing anything different here. Nothing's drastically changed. He doesn't really care for those operations and would like those to change. But at the end of the day, as the sheriff, I need to make sure that our facility is safe from things being brought in that shouldn't be brought in, and that we're right in line with what everyone is doing here.
Yeah.
So those are the sticking points. I'm hoping we can get past those, right? Because we all want to be partners. We all want to provide a high level of public safety, and we need to move forward.
Yeah.
These things shouldn't drag on for this long, because I think that our time is better spent doing crime prevention work in the streets.
So here's my question. What happens if you can't come to agreement on these things?
Well, so the Cass County Commission has signed off on the contract. They're the ones that do it. So Fargo will have on September 2nd, the Cass County Commission will terminate the old agreement that's in effect right now, so that the new contract that West Fargo signed with us and the one that we want Fargo to sign will take effect 90 days from now. So Fargo will have 90 days to decide if they want to enter into a contract with us. If they don't, then I suppose they would have to transport their arrestees to another jurisdiction. But, I mean, we all need to think about this reasonably, right, Steve? I mean, there isn't anywhere where they're going to go, any other jail that's going to take property that they want us to take, because no other jails do. Their property policies are the same as ours. Ours are consistent across the state, so no one's going to accept their property just like we wouldn't. And every other place that they go to do ITB court, their officers are going to have to go into there and do ITB court. So really, to me, this is a push to try to gain more control over our jail, in my opinion. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think the taxpayers of Cass County need to question some of this, because I'm guessing that would cost the citizens of Cass County several thousand dollars more to trans people to other jurisdictions.
Oh yeah, it's not feasible.
It comes down to, Steve, I think, as you can tell in our conversation here, that they're trying to gain control and push what they would like to do over the Cass County jail, which is not their jail.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Makes sense. Jesse, thanks for the time. I appreciate you answering a bunch of questions and giving us some clarity on these couple of items, because these are things that certainly matter in our community. So I appreciate you doing it.
Yep. No problem at all. If you need me to come back on at any other point, just let me know.
Okay. Sounds good. Will do. Thanks again, Jesse. Have a good evening.
Yep. Thank you.
Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. All right, we've got a news and weather break to get to here. Top 5 at 5 coming up next, and a couple thoughts based on what I just heard from Sheriff Johnner. All that next on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Here we go with hour number 2 of the Steve Hallstrom Show. Starting it a little bit late just because the conversation with Sheriff Johnner was really compelling, and I wanted to make sure that we gave him a chance to articulate his concerns and that we could understand where he's coming from. A couple thoughts after that conversation. Jesse Johnner chooses his words very carefully, very carefully. Jesse is even-tempered. And the guy that you hear on the radio, I can tell you, if you happen to see him out in public somewhere, when he's walking through the halls of our building here, he is that same way. Not a man of many words, but he is not unfriendly either. He just keeps things on an even keel. Clearly, he is frustrated. I heard him there as frustrated as I've ever heard him. And you heard him talk about, we're wasting time, and we don't have time. We're supposed to be doing our jobs here. And I guess if I'm going to try to put words in his mouth a little bit, it just sounds like they are being uncooperative in the city. I don't remember the exact words that he used, but I sat up in my chair when he said them, in talking about Fargo Chief Cebulski, saying, I think he used the words irresponsible, unreasonable, something like that. When you accuse someone else in your profession of being, whatever the word he used, irresponsible, I think was what I remembered hearing, that's notable. And for law enforcement who work, those guys all need to work together, police, sheriff, highway patrol. When you say somebody else is being irresponsible, that's different than being, I don't agree with them. When you say that another law enforcement officer or head of agency, whatever it might be, is being irresponsible, now you're talking about they're being reckless, you're causing trouble almost. So to me, that was as significant an interview as I've heard from Jesse Johnner. I've been working with him for years. Of course, this is all going to play into the bigger conversation here in this town about Chief Cebulski. And interesting, too, that he mentioned we don't have any trouble with West Fargo as mayor or the police chief. So interesting that Mayor Mahoney in Fargo gets brought into this, too. I don't think that was by accident. I guess I'll let you decide if this is a problem. I would remind us all of this. There are always two sides to a debate. And I'm not saying Jesse's exaggerating. I'm not saying he's making anything up. But I always like to hear from the other person about what's going on here. So we'll try to get Chief Cebulski to come on and just answer these concerns that Sheriff Johnner has brought. I will say that if there are TVs and dressers that people want to bring to the jail, well, at some point it doesn't make sense. To my simple mind, that doesn't make any sense. I imagine if there was something that was, I don't know, germane to a crime scene and it had to go with the guys he's being brought, I suppose a spot, but it makes it sound like we're not just talking about a backpack or two when you're talking about appliances and furniture being brought into the jail. 519 Steve Alsham Show. Let's give Jim in West Fargo a chance to weigh in on this. 701-271-1100. He wants to weigh in on this jail situation. He joins us on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing? So I think there's quite a bit of exaggeration going on because I did work in an emergency department in Fargo for many years. I tell you, people will come in. Most of these people who will go to the jail, they have to be cleared before they go to the jail, okay? And yes, many times they are bringing in quite a bit of luggage with them, but it's mostly in backpacks and things like that. Never saw any furniture or anything like that, but I'm sure that has occurred over time. Secondly, the inference that bed bugs get brought into the jail, they're going to have to clear out the whole jail. Well, I don't know how many times that we had patients come in, people from the homeless, whatever, come in with bed bugs. They go into a room. You might find a bed bug on or two. Okay, so guess what? That person ends up getting discharged, and the room gets fumigated. It takes about an hour, maybe 2 hours, for someone to come in. When you go to the jail, you go through a sally port. Then you have to go in through clearance. You have to be cleared through the officers there. Okay, I worked at the jail at one point also. And they're not going to be admitted to the general public until they've been cleaned, the general population, until they've cleaned up and everything else. So this whole thing, you're going to have to move 350 people because there's bed bugs and they're having to be fumigated. That is just gross exaggeration. That's not how it works. So that's all I got to say.
Okay, Jim, I appreciate you calling and giving some perspective on that. Thanks for giving a shout. All right, 521, Steve. I don't know how to comment on what Jim said. He's got more experience on this than I do. I'll just leave his comments there. I respect Jim and appreciate and thank him for the service that he gave to our community doing what he did. And maybe if we get Sheriff Johnner another time, we'll get a chance to clarify those remarks too. 521, we've got the top 5 and 5. This has been good, though. Thanks for weighing in on this and being part of this conversation here too. And there's a couple of texts that have come in on the downtown bar scene as well, and email also. We'll get to those as we continue on the Steve Alsham Show. All right, it's time for the top 5 and 5 here on the Steve Alsham Show. Because of our interview with Sheriff Johnner, we're bumping this back just a little bit. So it's the top 5 and 5:25 today. All right, these are what I believe to be the 5 most consequential stories in the news cycle today. We start with number 1. The number of reported cases of West Nile virus is rising in North Dakota. This West Nile is nothing to be messed around with. I bring this to you to encourage you, make sure you're doing the lawn clothes and bug spray route, because there are now 26 reported cases of West Nile in North Dakota, 11 people hospitalized, 9 with nervous system complications. I don't know how many people were in the hospital with COVID when that was a big deal. I think it was more than 11. But I'm just saying that this is a significant deal here. And late August is historically the most active period for West Nile virus. And, of course, we just got a bunch of rain, and it's going to be warm and muggy, no doubt, between now and the end of September. So make sure you're putting on that bug spray. Story number two, North Dakota Highway Patrol is giving us some interesting data after the first couple weeks of the new 80-mile-an-hour speed limit on North Dakota highways and interstates. They are seeing a significant drop in the number of drivers exceeding the speed limit. Captain Brian Niewind tells the forum that speeding violations are down 25% because drivers and troopers are adjusting to the higher limit. Very interesting there. Well, that crazy night of violence in downtown Fargo a couple weeks ago has led to another news story and another update today. The man who police say beat another man to death in downtown Fargo with a skateboard August 3rd has now been charged with manslaughter. Tobias Walker, 19 years of age, is now being charged with manslaughter and aggravated assault with a dangerous weapon. He was already facing an aggravated assault charge from the incident. Those charges are all dated August 3rd. A court document say that Walker assaulted 55-year-old John Pilcher, sending him to the hospital with critical injuries where he died 10 days later. He was arraigned on the new charges today. The Star Tribune, citing anonymous sources close to Tim Walz, say the Minnesota governor is privately wavering on whether to seek re-election and run for a third term after previously signaling he was likely to run. And this is a shift that has set off what the Star Tribune is calling a quiet scramble within the DFL. Some are eyeing higher office if he does step aside. And finally, the story that just keeps on giving out of D.C., the Trump administration is doubling down on its crackdown of law enforcement and crime, I should say, in the nation's capital, has named the head of the Drug Enforcement Administration to be Washington's, quote, emergency police commissioner with all the powers of the police chief. This is a significant move, reports ABC News, that increases national control over the city as part of the federal government's law enforcement takeover. Attorney General Pam Bondi said in this directive that DEA boss Terry Cole will assume the powers and the duties vested in the District of Columbia Chief of Police. So this is different now than just bringing in some National Guard troops. This is the federal government taking over leadership of the Washington, D.C. police force. Crazy. Now, the police union head has already come out and said, great, we need it. The mayor doesn't like it. I can't assume that the police chief likes it as well. But that's exactly what is happening there. And this will make heads explode, no question about it, among the congressional left and the left in Washington, D.C., no doubt. All right, 529 coming up on 530 here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. We got a check of news and weather coming up for you next. And then after that, the Drug Enforcement Administration, the federal DEA, is encouraging moms and dads to be talking with kids before they head back to school about drugs, and specifically how social media can play a role in buying and selling of the illegal drugs. That, when we come back on the Steve Hallstrom Show, I should also mention that we are monitoring the Trump and Putin news conference, which is scheduled to begin here in just a few minutes. And we hope to be able to bring that to you before we finish up as well. We'll try to get some of those first comments from the news conference when it begins. That's next. All that ahead on the Steve Hallstrom Show. Students across our country, across our state, are preparing to return to school. And the Drug Enforcement Administration's Omaha division is encouraging moms and dads to have honest chats about their kids about the potentially lethal consequences of experimenting with drugs, and specifically the threat posed by drug dealers on social media. The numbers provided by the DEA say that to date in North Dakota, nearly 70 pounds of meth has been seized across the state, the highest amount in more than 5 years. And we just heard a few days ago There was a $12 million bust of meth down by Sturgis near the bike rally there. More than 67,000 deadly doses of fentanyl have also been removed from communities in North Dakota through the great efforts of the DEA. We are pleased to be joined on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line by Emily Murray. Emily is the public information officer for the DEA's Omaha division. Emily, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I guess I'll just kind of let you go with what you want people to be thinking about and talking about right now with kids going back to school.
Okay, great. Thanks. So it is that time of year. Kids are getting ready to walk out the door, meet their new teachers, get their backpacks and school supplies back together. And this is a time that we're really hoping that families will sit down and have those conversations about the dangers of drugs, about the dangers of experimentation, and then also keeping in mind the threat that comes from social media. And I know that sounds really extreme, but at this day and age, what we're learning is that if you have a cell phone, you pretty much can have a drug dealer in your pocket. So it's so important for parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins to have these conversations with students as they go back to school so that they're aware of what is out there in our communities.
What do we want to look for as parents? We know that our kids are on social media all the time. Heck, we're on social media all the time. So obviously our kids are doing their TikToks and Instagram things too. What do we want to look for as parents? How can we begin to find out what's really happening with our kids and the things that they might be looking at or approached with?
So that's a great question. One of the things that we tell parents to look for are emojis, which sounds kind of different. But what we want is for people to look for emojis that seem out of place, maybe out of context in a conversation. Maybe you're seeing cookies and school buses and chocolate bars, and that really doesn't fit into the context of a conversation that that student is having with another student. Those are actually signs that can be used by drug dealers to buy or sell. So look for things that seem a little out of place, a palm tree emoji of all things. You know, that one is kind of odd to see, but that is something. But the important thing also to realize is that these are changing on a regular basis. I mean, we know how trends go with students that are on social media. Things come and go quickly, and with that, things evolve. So look out, see what kind of looks unique or a little different on their accounts. Also, keep up with the people that they're in contact with. You know, encourage your kids to lock down their accounts as much as possible. You know, there's a lot of people that have friends of friends of friends, and it's one of those, if you're a friend of mine, then I'm a friend of yours, and that's not necessarily the case. Because what we've seen is that that's what happens, is you've got that drug dealer then that's reaching out with that temptation for experimentation.
Tell me specifically what I'm looking for. I'm dumb on this whole thing. So I see a palm tree on my kid's text message or a social media post. What does a palm tree mean? What is that? And what do you do with it? And how does a palm tree turn into bad drugs in my kid's pocket?
Right. You know, unless your kid is planning a trip to the beach, palm tree is probably not something that often shows up, but it is a another way to mention marijuana, actually. School buses and chocolate bars are Xanax bars. They all have kind of this double meaning that they think that they're being creative and cryptic and they're keeping this information. Because let's be honest, if you're looking at the phone or I'm looking at the phone of my kid and I see a Hershey bar, it's like, oh, just a cute little bar. But it does sometimes have an alternative meaning. Not to say that it always does, but it does on occasion.
Emily, a lot of times our kids will be on some kind of medication for something or another. And so you take a look at, okay, well, that's the Adderall maybe that, that my son or daughter is taking. And okay, they've got, you know, the jar full of pills and they got that from the doctor, we think, but it can be something different. How do we try to figure out what's really in the hands of our kids?
So you need to be only taking medications that are prescribed by a doctor. And as a parent, that's something that you really can control to some degree. You know, if your child is under age 18, the medications that they're taking should be prescribed by a doctor, a licensed doctor, and filled by a licensed pharmacist. Anything else, you have a high probability of that being a counterfeit pill. Anything that's bought on social media, it's going to be a counterfeit pill. There's no legitimate prescription medication that you can buy online or through a social media app.
Yeah, makes sense. How do we have these conversations with our kids? This is probably more about parenting 101 than it is about you being a really good DEA official. But how do we have these conversations? Like, hey, you're not taking drugs, are you? It's just kind of weird, right? But how do we do this?
It is. It's a hard conversation to have. And truly one of the best ways to start is when you have a young child. And it seems so strange to introduce that conversation to a kindergartner. But when we go out and we talk to the younger elementary kids, we're not talking about hard drugs. We're talking about prescription medication and prescription safety. We're reminding kids that the only medication that they should take is one that a trusted adult gives them. If they're old enough to read, make sure that they can see their name on a prescription bottle and know that that's all that they should take. That's just a really good introduction to the conversation. And then as the kids get older, you start introducing some of those harder drugs. So you start introducing methamphetamine and fentanyl and cocaine and explaining what's being seen in the communities, that we've got these counterfeit pills out there that are made to look exactly like Xanax, Adderall, oxycodone, but truly they're laced with fentanyl, or they have that potentially deadly dose of fentanyl. So there are conversation starters on the DEA website. So if you visit DEA.gov, there are grade specific, age specific conversation starters on how to jump into that conversation. There's fact sheets so you can kind of educate yourself before you talk to your kids. You can learn about these drugs yourself so you feel a little bit better. We also have a fact sheet out there that's for parents and caregivers, and it shows some of those common emojis, and it has some of the information about fentanyl, whether it's pill or powder form. So there's a lot of great resources on the website that parents and caregivers, family members can access.
Yeah, so important to be monitoring what our kids are doing, what they're seeing. And for a lot of parents, it's like, oh, I don't want to take my kid's phone. They're going to think that I'm spying on them. I guess that's why these conversations are so important when, like you said, as young as kindergarten. And when you give your kid a phone for the first time at age whatever that is, I think that's the right time to say, okay, I'm giving you this phone, but you don't have to take it. If you do, though, just know that once a week I'm going to go through your stuff. I mean, there are ways you can do this, right? But those early conversations seem so important.
They really do. And I think what we're seeing is when you start those conversations early and you continue those, so it's not just a once a year conversation, but it's several times a year checking in with your kid. Hopefully that's building that relationship so that when that child is approached by somebody to experiment with something, or they get a text or a snap or whatever it is through one of the social media apps that seems out of place, hopefully they've built up that relationship with their family member or their trusted adult that they can go and talk to them and approach them about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy to think the cartels are on social media talking to our kids, but we know it. It's big business. It's billions of dollars. And I would just say, you know, on a topic we've talked about a lot on this program, the southern border and what has come through that, law enforcement tells us that it's not just people that have come through that southern border. There's a lot of drugs as well that have come through. So sadly, there's a lot more for our kids to deal with than maybe we had to deal with. But great reminders and good conversation starters today. Emily, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to raise our awareness on this at a very important time of the year when our kids are going back to school.
Well, thank you so much. And I wish all those kids good luck in the upcoming school year.
There you go. That's right. Let's think positive. You bet. Thanks so much, Emily. You take care.
Thanks. You too.
That's Emily Murray, Public Information Officer in the Omaha Field Division of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. All right. We've got a couple texts that have come in on the jail thing. Let's get into those when we come back. And we are monitoring the scene in Anchorage, Alaska, where President Trump and Russian President Putin are scheduled to begin a news conference any minute. If they do that before we finish up, we'll take a little bit of that. That's next on the Steve Alstrom Show. All right, we are continuing to watch the scene in Anchorage. President Trump, President Putin going to be doing a joint news conference after a day of conversations. President Trump is pushing hard for a ceasefire and an end to the war between Russia and Ukraine, trying to broker some kind of peace deal. To this point, it hasn't happened. And we'll see if any ground was gained at all today. Those two sides have been very stubborn, Putin in particular. Trump has been frustrated with him at pretty much every turn in this war. So we'll be watching that. And when that press conference begins, we'll go to and take it as long as we can here today. Okay. A random question came up about One Big Beautiful Bill. We've been talking about it a lot today. Steve, does the Big Beautiful Bill cover any health care expenses for people who have a job but their employer doesn't offer health benefits? Not really. It doesn't directly provide any kind of insurance for those who are working somewhere. Maybe their employer doesn't have it. There's like some things that are kind of tangents on this with like, HSA enhancements, health savings accounts enhancements, but there's not any new like public exchanges or private insurance programs that fill that gap. So no, I think the short answer is no on that. So appreciate your question. Sorry, I don't have a better answer for you on that. Steve, I will believe Jesse Johnner, 27 years in law enforcement and 7 as Cass County Sheriff, before I believe anything out of caller Jim's mouth. Take that to the bank. Yeah, you know, so Jim calls after Jesse, and Jim goes, I think he's exact. Look, two things can be true at the same time, right? Jim can be right that there is a place where you go through and you're scanned and fumigated and whatever else. I imagine there are protocols for that. But I think what Jesse is saying is, look, who knows what's going to be in some backpack that comes into the jail, and you just never know what might happen. And so I think Jesse, I'm not trying to put words in his mouth, but I think what he's trying to say is, why would we open ourselves up to an additional risk or additional exposure to something that comes in through some personal property, even if it gets caught early? So, yeah, I mean, can somebody get through the process of being admitted? And then something, I guess it's always possible, but you know, maybe they catch a lot of those things at the checkpoint where they come in. I think Jesse's just saying, look, you're opening yourselves up to a lot of possibilities that you don't necessarily have to. So why are we doing it? So I appreciate Jim's call. I appreciate, obviously, Sheriff Johnner. And I think the text message makes a really good point. Jesse knows the job, knows the jail, knows the concern better than anybody. Here in this community. Maybe Andy Frobig, the boss man of the jail that works in Cass County Sheriff's Office. Steve, Cass County Jail is absolutely disgusting. There's lots of people that do not belong in that environment. The sleeping quarters are disgraceful. The air mattresses they give you are all deflated. The food is disgusting. Most of the correctional officers are DEI hires. There will never be unity between black people and everybody else because they are the most disrespectful. Okay, well, it just goes on to someone not a favor of black people. Cass County Jail is inhumane. I don't have any comment to that. I appreciate you signing the text and letting us know your opinion. Steve, why doesn't the Big Beautiful Bill cut anything from military spending? $1 trillion to a department that's never passed an audit. Fair point. My gut reaction to that is I really want us to have the best possible military. So, you know, speak softly and carry a big stick. It's kind of like we talk about policing. You've got to have enough police, and they have to have enough of an aura behind them with sentencing laws, jails, and all of that, that you have a healthy fear of them. I think the same is true with the military. Now, I don't know if $1 trillion is the right number. I really don't. Probably most of us would struggle to figure out what the right budget number is there. But it's got to be something. You know, is it $800 billion? I don't know. $500 billion? I don't know. I have heard that we have not spent nearly as much as we need to over time. And considering who was in office most recently, you know, they in Afghanistan, how much equipment did we lose there, and what value was that? We have to replace some of those things. Maybe a lot of these things have been neglected over time. Maybe all the money given to defense went to DEI training instead of buying the stuff we really need, tanks and missiles. So I would say this. I think Donald Trump is trying to bring back, my opinion is, I believe he's honestly trying to bring back fiscal responsibility to government. And I believe he's also trying to bring us to a position of being more powerful militarily. And that's arms, and it's get rid of the DEI and the woke stuff, and let's just focus on creating fighting machines, people, and fighting machines, tanks. So I'm going to go with that and say I'm willing to see what Trump does in these 4 years. And at the end of that, Maybe there will be audits and we can find out if that was the appropriate amount to spend on military. I don't know. But thank you for the text message. It's a fair question to ask. Every question, fair question to ask. All right. We are about ready to begin the news conference between President Trump and President Putin. So let's listen in on that right now.
Proposal to travel out here to Alaska. It only makes sense that we've met here because our countries, though separated by the ocean, are close neighbors. So when we've met, when I came out of the plane, and I've said, good afternoon, dear neighbor. Very good to see you. In good health. And to see you alive. I think that is very neighborly. And I think that's some kind words that we can say to each other. We're separated by the Strait of Bering, though there are two islands only between the Russian island and the U.S. island. They're only 4 kilometers apart. We're close neighbors, and it's a fact. It's also important that Alaska has to do with our common heritage, common history between Russia and the U.S., and many positive events have to do with that territory. Still, there is tremendous cultural heritage back from the Russian America. For example, Orthodox churches and a lot of more than 700 geographical names of Russian origin. During the Second World War, it was here in Alaska that was the origin of the legendary air bridge for the supply of military aircraft and other equipment under the Lend-Lease program. It was a dangerous and treacherous route over the vast emptiness of ice. However, the pilots of both countries did everything to bring close to the victory. They risked their lives and they gave it all for the common victory. I was just in the city of Magadan in Russia, and there is a memorial there dedicated to the Russian and the U.S. pilots. And there are two flags, the U.S. flag and the Russian flag. And I know that here as well, there is such a memorial. There is a military burial place several kilometers away from here. The Soviet pilots are buried there who died during that dangerous mission. We're thankful to the citizens and the government of the U.S. for carefully taking care of their memory. I think that's very worthy and noble. We'll always remember other historical examples when our countries defeated common enemies together in the spirit of battle camaraderie and allyship that supported each other and facilitated each other. I'm sure that this heritage will help us rebuild and foster mutually beneficial and equal ties at this new stage, even during the hardest conditions. It is known that there have been no summits between Russia and the U.S. for 4 years, and that's a long time. This time was very hard for bilateral relations, and let's be frank, they've fallen to the lowest point since the Cold War. I think that's not benefiting our countries and the world as a whole. It is apparent that sooner or later we had to amend the situation to move on from the confrontation to dialogue. And in this case, a personal meeting between the heads of state.
Okay, it looks like we are not going to be able to hear from President Trump before we finish our program here. Vladimir Putin began. The first couple words we missed, he characterized the day as productive conversations. So apparently, Vladimir Putin, at least outwardly, is saying that something positive happened with the discussion today. We'll find out more here as they continue the conversation. But that will do it for us. We are out of time in today's show. Have a great weekend, my friend, and a great evening, and keep on flying that flag.